We didn't test that ahead of time. It is with great honor that I have to be able to share with you this morning on this this issue of what happens to be the fourth beatitude. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. By the way, I believe I'm going to be pronouncing that blessed. It dates back to my early days, or maybe when they were reading from the King James Bible. Of course, that word is pronounced in King James, blessed, not blessed. So blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. If you say blessed, that's perfectly acceptable with English. But I think it's more reverential, because these are actually Jesus' words to say blessed. And I'm trying to get a little bit away from the dumbing down of the word blessed that that you might find in Twitter. Hashtag blessed. I got a new job today. Hashtag blessed. My cat smiled at me today. Hashtag blessed. I had fresh strawberries on my French toast this morning. Hashtag blessed. See, this is more than that. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. We've been talking about this. This is our fourth beatitude, and we've been talking about this word blessed for quite some time. But just to refresh our memory of what that means, that word blessed is in some modern translations translated as happy. And happy comes close, but happy is a feeling. Happy is what happens to us. Happy is not the action that is happening to us. And to have a more, I believe, to have a more accurate understanding of what the word blessed means, it would be to consider what God has involved in this. It really includes being favored by God. And so when you have the word blessed, the word should come to mind is this idea of being in God's favor. We're going to be looking at this song in just a little bit, but let me just go back and talk a little bit more about what it means to be in God's favor or to be approved by God. This conveys the idea that God is the actor and we are the recipient of what God has done. So we're the recipient of God's favor and his approval and all that we get because of God's favor and approval. So we could actually say this verse this way. Instead of saying the word blessed, we could say, so approved and favored by God and all that comes with it are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. I brought a visual aid for me today. Some of you may know what this is. This is the best apple cider in the universe. This is apple cider that came from apples from our place, pressed by people. Maybe some of you were involved in the pressing of this cider. And I tell you, I may be biased. I don't think I am. There is no cider that tastes, it comes anywhere close to this. And you know why I know that? And this is from last year, and it's frozen, unfortunately. So I can't demonstrate it and have the glow on my face when I drink it down. But I know that this is the best apple cider. And why is that? I louder. I made it. That certainly is good. And not only that, I have tasted it. And because I have tasted this cider in the past, I have full confidence that this one's going to taste just as good as the rest of the cider that we had at our place, because I have the experience of having tasted it before. So I'm going to place that visual aid, that culinary aid, right there so that I can have a vision of that during my message. Because it helps me to be able to draw the connection between the vision that we have and the knowledge that we have in Jesus and the experience that we have received through him, I have tasted that cider and know that it is good. I appreciate the worship team this morning. Would you give a round of applause to Jack and the team? I could have selected any one of the songs that Jack included in his worship set to spend a little bit of time focusing on, because each and every one just speaks so clearly and poignantly to the message I have for you today. But I selected this one, "I Breathe You In, God." And it says, "I breathe you in, God." That's the title. "The presence of the living God satisfies the depth of my heart." Let me read that again. "The presence of the living God satisfies the depths of my heart." Amen? It's so true. And you know, when we, and it goes on to say, "And all of me I change." Let's see. "And all of me changed when you came and led me free with your glory and grace. I breathe you in, God, for you are thick all around me. I breathe you in, God, for you are thick all around me. The brightness of your love's pure light, it pierces through the darkness of night. And everything is possible now, for you are here and you are good." And then it goes into a chorus, reprisal, says, "You are good, God." And I love that expression that's repeated over and over again, "For you are good, God." You know, when we were singing this song this morning, if you were looking at me, tears welled up in my eyes as we were singing the song, and I became so attuned with what this the song is trying to get us to experience. And when it was, "And when I don't understand, I will choose you. When I don't understand, I will choose you, God. When I don't understand, I will choose to love you, God." This song speaks of what it means to hunger and thirst for righteousness, for you will be satisfied. God desires to have that depth of relationship with us. In fact, God created us to have that depth of relationship. He created us with a need to know him. And when that relationship with God is not filled, we will always feel a sense of not being fully satisfied. Solomon, in the book of Ecclesiastes, put it this way: "I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. God has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's mind, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from beginning to the end." You know, you reflect on that verse, and you almost have to say, "What? What's going on, God? You've put eternity into man's mind. We, the humans, would not be able to think of things beyond our temporal selves if it hadn't been that God put in our minds the ability to think beyond this temporal existence, to think of the eternal. We have that privilege because God created us that way. But Solomon goes on to say that this was a burden that God put on us because God has not revealed everything to us. He has left mysteries. And you have to ask yourself the question, why would God create us to have eternity in our mind and then not yet explain everything to us, to leave mysteries? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think a piece of that is God created us that way so that we would have a longing, that we would have a yearning to try to search for him and to know that which is eternal. He has created us in such a way that we're restless and we're longing and we're hungering in our search for God. St. Augustine said it this way: You have made us yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. Blaise Pascal, this is for you, Dave. Dave loves Blaise Pascal. He was a 17th century French mathematician. How many in school remember the Pascal triangle? I don't, but this is that Pascal. So Blaise Pascal was a mathematician, a French mathematician, but he was also a theologian. And he had this to say about this subject. What else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once in man a true happiness, of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace? This he tries in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there to help him, to help he cannot find those that are. Though none can help, since this infinite abyss can be filled only with an infinite and immutable object. In other words, by God himself. So we have our verse today. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. I've already talked about the word blessed. Let me now look at some of the other words that I want us to focus on today. The next one is the word righteousness. You know, righteousness is a very common word found throughout the Bible. Old Testament, New Testament, very common word, found hundreds of times. And if you read the Amplified Version, Ken, if you read the Amplified Version of the word righteousness here in Matthew, the writers of the Amplified Version will give you the amplified meaning of the Greek word that is commonly translated righteousness. And I didn't read it, but you might have a half a dozen different synonyms that this word could mean. But you know, Jesus meant one thing when he said the word righteousness. And so today we're going to look at, hopefully, understand what Jesus meant when he said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Then we're going to take a brief look at the idea of hungering and thirsting and the nature of that and what we get because of hungering and thirsting, which is, of course, that we are satisfied. Let me just briefly talk about this sentence one more time. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. When Jesus made this statement, he did not say they may be satisfied. He did not leave it open. It's a promise. It's a promise that I believe that we can claim. If we do hunger and thirst for righteousness, we shall be satisfied. It's a promise that God has given to the people that were listening to that sermon there on the Sermon on the Mount that one day. It's a promise throughout time that people have had that we can claim that. If we hunger and thirst for righteousness, we shall be satisfied. Okay, let's dig in a little bit deeper to the word righteousness. What did Jesus mean when he said righteousness? Well, first off, I believe it's not rightness. Jesus did not say here that that we become right with God if we hunger and thirst for him. You know, to be right with God means it's the only way, the only way that any of us are right with God, because it's through grace, through the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. And through his sacrificial giving, we have become right with God. There's nothing I could do, there's nothing you can do to be more right with God. It's not something that we can earn or we can achieve. And yet when you look at this verse, it has all the appearance that they are doing something. Because it's right there. If I hunger and thirst for righteousness, I'll be satisfied. So this word righteousness speaks to something other than rightness with God. Last week, when Caleb was doing his message on meekness, when he was describing for us, and I listened to it on the recording since we weren't here last week, but he had to go to other passages of Scripture to help us understand what the word meek meant, or meekness meant, because that word only appears once in the Sermon on the Mount, meek. It occurs elsewhere in the Bible, but not on the Sermon on the Mount. So to understand meekness, Caleb had to go elsewhere in the Bible to help define it for us. That's not true with the word righteousness. Jesus, on five different times in this one Sermon on the Mount, used the word righteousness. Two other times, right here in chapter 5 that we have. And so I'm going to look at those two other times that we have. They have the occurrence of the word righteousness to see if we can better understand what Jesus meant when he used the word righteousness. Because if we're going to hunger and thirst after it, wouldn't it be good for us to know what we're hungering and thirsting after? So, the next time that the word righteousness occurs, it's just four verses later. It says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And this just happens to be another beatitude. So we have two different beatitudes that Jesus uses the word righteousness. So I think this is going to be a clue for us. This is going to help us in our search of trying to understand what Jesus means by righteousness by looking at that occurrence. I hope this chart doesn't become too difficult. As I was putting this together, there's a relationship. If we look at the different Beatitudes, there's a relationship that I think becomes easily apparent if we put it out in a chart. And so on this thing, on the far left-hand column, you have the different verses. I've titled the first the major column on the left, "Blessed Are," and we have eight different blessings we have there. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, those who mourn, the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, peacemakers, those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness." So those are eight different Beatitudes. And if you notice, the way Jesus framed these together, there's a bookend by what you get from it. The first one in verse 3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And the eighth one, down in verse 10, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness." Same words. "For theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And you see this looks like a sandwich almost. You have the top slice of bread and the bottom slice of bread where Jesus is emphasizing that theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And inside that sandwich, you have the meat of it. And that's broken up into two sections of four different Beatitudes. You have poor in spirit, mourn, those who are meek, and then those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. This first group ends with verse 6. "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." The second group of four, which starts in verse 7, says, it ends in verse 10, which says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake." I think that's pretty cool stuff when I see it charted out like that. I can't claim ownership of this. I got this idea of this kind of structure in the Beatitudes from John Piper. I think it's a pretty reliable source, and so I felt freedom to use it, giving him credit for it, but use it in the sermon, the structure of the Beatitudes on that. I believe the more that you ponder it, the more significant it becomes. Notice that the three Beatitudes that lead up to hungering and thirsting are descriptions of, they could be described as things of emptiness or passivity. We have a poverty-stricken spirit. We have mourning over our sin or over some misery. We have meekness without retaliation. Let's be frank. You know, these are good and they're right, and God and Jesus gave them to us because they're important truths that we need to know. But it doesn't lead us to the idea of richness and fullness in our lives. But the good news is, Jesus didn't stop there with that first set of four. Because you look at the second set of four, because Jesus makes a transition from emptiness, where we need to hunger and thirst for something, to fullness, where we are persecuted for the sake of something that we have in full. And so you have merciful, pure in heart, peacemakers. And with those things that make us full, those three attributes, we then are full of things and results in being persecuted for the sake of that which has made us full and overflowing. So I think this structure is very helpful. I believe it's very helpful in helping us to understand what the word righteousness that Jesus is referring to here. Now, there's lots of components of righteousness, and I'm not trying to suggest what I'm about to say, that this encompasses all of what righteousness is. But I believe it's what Jesus wanted those people to hear about what righteousness was. And those are three things. Because if we look at the three things that have made us full in this, in verse 6, we're empty because we're hungering and thirsting for it still. In verse 10, we have it to overfilling. What's that word? I'm overfilled? Overfull? Because now I'm being persecuted for that which has filled me up. And what are the three things here that constitutes that? I'm merciful, I'm pure in heart, and I'm a peacemaker. I'm not just peaceful, I'm a peacemaker. So for the purposes of today's message, it's my belief that when Jesus was sharing on the Sermon on the Mount and the thousands were watching and he was talking about these different blessings, what he wanted to convey to those followers was, this is how you get filled up with righteousness. This is the benefit of what being satisfied with righteousness are. You will be merciful, you will be pure in heart, and you will be a peacemaker. Well, if that works, if that particular understanding of what Jesus was meaning in this context at this time for the word righteousness, it would be necessary for other times that Jesus used the word righteousness that it had the same meaning on that. So let's go to the next. So the definition of righteousness is that which has filled us up, namely mercy, purity, and peacemaking. The next time in Matthew chapter 5 where Jesus uses the word righteousness, he says, "For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." And following that introduction, Jesus then goes through six different illustrations where he contrasts the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees and the righteousness that Jesus says his followers should have. And you're probably familiar with that context. They all start with this. You have heard that it was said to men of old, i.e., the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. But I tell you, Jesus saying, but this is my righteousness. And Jesus goes through that process on six different occasions for the rest of Matthew chapter 5. For example, the first one. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. Good truth of the scribes of old. But Jesus goes on to say, but I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. So if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. And if you take a close look, and I don't have the ability to take the time to go through all six of these different illustrations, but I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to read verses 21 through 48 of chapter 5 as Jesus goes through and lists these six different illustrations of, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you. And I honestly believe that if you do that and you go through that, it will clearly demonstrate that in all six of these illustrations, it still speaks to those same three truths. Showing mercy, being radically pure in your heart before God, and making peace instead of retaliation. That these three components are what Jesus wants those people there to get. They're listening to this message, the Sermon on the Mount, and he wants them to come away with, if you want to hunger and thirst for righteousness, here's where you can start. Here's where you can start. You can show mercy. You can be radically pure in your heart before God, because it's only God that knows your heart anyway. But be radically pure in your heart before God and making peace instead of retaliation. Of course, righteousness is more than this, but a good sermon only has three points to remember, and Jesus knew that. He went to Hermeneutics 101 at Dallas Theological Seminary, whatever, and so he didn't want to overburden his listeners by listing a dozen different things that are components of what it means to be righteous or to have righteousness, but he did list these three. And was good enough for Jesus, so it's good enough for me. All right. So let's move on to the next one. And I'm introducing that with this idea of hungering and thirsting for God. I'm assuming that most of us here are actively pursuing God. That is, we're hungering and thirsting after him. And if you do that, if you do hunger and thirst after God, I thoroughly believe that you will be fully satisfied. You know, there's countless verses that speak to this, and I believe that many of you probably have your own favorite verses that you use to, as you view this concept for you, what it means to hunger and thirst for God. Two of them came quickly to my mind, and they're both in Psalms. The first one is, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him." We are challenged to taste and see and have God prove himself to be worthy of that action on our part, to taste and see that the Lord is good. The other one in Psalm 42, "As a deer pants for the flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God?" How many remember a chorus in the 70s that used this verse? Janelle, do you want to come up and help me sing it? Okay, well, I'm not going to sing it by alone. I asked Jack if he knew the song. You know what his answer was? He was not familiar with this song. I don't know how many years it was in vogue, but there was a cute Christian chorus that started with, "As the deer panteth," King James, "as the deer panteth for the waters, so my soul panteth after thee." Good example of what it means to be thirsty for God. You have the image of a deer that's thirsty, that's panting, that's striving to get to the source of water so that it can drink. And that's the attitude that we need to have when we consider the idea of hungering and thirsting for God. But you know something? That's not what Jesus said. Jesus' words were not, "Blessed are you who search for God, for you will be satisfied." What Jesus said was, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." So it's interesting why didn't Jesus say, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for God, for they shall be satisfied? Instead, he said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall see God. Yes, we were made for God, and even as Blaise Pascal said, you were made with an abyss that only the infinite God can fill. Hunger and thirst, the hunger and the thirst of your life that cannot be satisfied by anything in this world, is the constant beckoning of God to remember that you were made for another world. You were made for God. But you were also made for righteousness. Sean, I may be getting into a blasphemous area, so if you have to pull me off the stage and correct the church, be ready. Here's my thought. Heaven does not need your righteousness. It's got enough of its own. Heaven does not need your righteousness. Earth needs your righteousness. And so what Jesus is saying for us here, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, it's for what we need to do here and now, because it's earth. It's the people that you live with. It's the people that you work beside. It's the people in your world, whatever it is, that needs to experience your righteousness. They need to experience your mercy. They need to experience the purity in your heart. They need to experience you as a peacemaker so that through you, they can see Jesus. That you can be Jesus' hands and feet and eyes because you have hungered and thirsted for righteousness, and because you have hungered and thirsted after it, you have been satisfied. It's a promise. Jesus has given us this promise that if we hunger and thirst after him, he will satisfy us. So heaven doesn't need your righteousness, but earth does. So be hungry for it now. People who hunger and thirst for righteousness are people who crave for the grace to be merciful. People who hunger and thirst for righteousness are people who yearn for radical purity of thoughts and feelings. People who hunger and thirst for righteousness are people who passionately desire to make peace. These three things that I'd like you to consider and spend time meditating on and dwelling and to see, am I hungering and thirsting for righteousness? Am I a person that craves for the grace to be merciful? Am I the person who yearns for a radical purity of thoughts and feelings? Am I a person who hungers and thirsts for righteousness, who passionately desires to make peace? Make it a passion and a hunger and a thirst in your life to be able to do great things of righteousness. Don't settle for the little half-hearted satisfaction that the world has to offer. But remember that this is only possible through Christ who strengthens you. You can't do these things on your own, but through Christ, you can hunger and thirst for righteousness, and you would be able to do them. My prayer for you, my prayer for myself, is to pray the same prayer that Paul did for the church in Ephesus. He wrote, "For this reason, I kneel before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name. I pray that out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with the Lord's holy people. Aren't you glad that it's together? That you're not having to do this on your own? That you have power together with all the Lord's people to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ. And to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, full of favor, full of God, we are blessed. The song that I've selected, the hymn that I've selected for us to consider today is Be Thou My Vision. Jonathan Swift wrote, "Vision is the art of seeing things invisible." An anonymous writer, aren't you sad for anonymous writers? You know, these poor, these people come up with these very smart and witty things, but somehow their name gets lost over time. So an anonymous writer penned these thoughts about having a vision for one's life. A vision without a task is a dream. A task without vision is drudgery. A vision with a task is the hope of the world. Be thou my vision. The words to this song actually date back to the 8th century. That's 700 and something. That's 1,200 to 1,300 years ago. The words to Be Thou My Vision were written in Gaelic originally in Ireland. It's an anonymous Irish hymn that I said, you know, does date back to the 8th century. It was translated into English by a woman named Mary Byrne in 1905. And the music was first associated with this text, the hymn, in 1919. So, Jack, as you lead us in worship today, you're going to be singing a song just as you're going to, well, almost just as you're going to be singing it. I appreciate so much what you're doing with the song. It's been around since 1919 on that. The Irish hymn text expresses the ageless need for man to have a heavenly vision, to experience God's care and personal presence throughout this pilgrimage. So let's just briefly take a look at the words. I'm not going to read them at this time, because you will be given opportunity to read them in a moment. But as you look at the words, you can see that the author's high regard for God is evident in the various titles that he has ascribed to God. He is his vision, his Lord, best thought, wisdom, word, great father, high king, inheritance, treasure, heart, and ruler of all. When you hunger and thirst for righteousness, you need to have your eyes set on the Lord. He needs your whole heart. He needs all of your mind. And do not hunger and thirst for anything that the world has to offer. It will not satisfy. Could I have the worship team go ahead and come on up at this time? We're going to be looking at this song. And Olivia, when we first do this part, you can switch over to Pro Presenter, so the words of the song will be on Pro Presenter, not these words. But for right now, these words will stay up there for us to look at. In a book about hymns that explains some of the different hymns and who wrote them, and the information that I got about this particular hymn, I obtained from this book. It goes on to include another poem that's titled Life. It says, "To the preacher, life's a sermon. To the joker, life's a jest. To the miser, life is money. To the loafer, life's a rest. To the soldier, life's a battle. To the teacher, life's a school. Life's a great thing for a thinker, but it's folly for the fool. Life is just one long vacation to the man who loves his work, but it's constant dodging duty to the everlasting shirk. To the faithful, earnest worker, life's a story ever new. Life is what we try to make it. What in truth is life to you? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom. Forgive me. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. So as Eric, the song, he's going to be playing it, and the band's going to join in and play it, and they're just going to have just the music for all four of the verses of Be Thou My Vision. And my request for each of us is that we take time just thinking about these words. You know, when we praise God, there's some of us that praise God in singing songs as we praise out boisterously. And there's others that when we sing songs, we sing quieter. And you know, there's still others that choose not to sing, but they reflect upon the words. So whether you sing out boisterously, sing quietly, or just reflect upon the words, at this time, we all get to just reflect. So we'll reflect on those four verses today. Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. And then Jack and the worship team will go through the song and we'll sing it together.